Coming soon from Circle of Spears Productions, The Rocks of Azerol by Richard D. While Horace was waking on the Swift Shore, in North Castle, Ralph the Flyer had just finished his fast breaker, along with the others. Normally, they would all be taken to the workshops by steam mobile, some to train on the model, and others to prepare for the flight down the valley. Today, Ralph was separated from the rest, and instead taken to a strip of level ground where a long, straight path had been laid out and levelled by the convict labourers. The artisan engineer explained that they had a different job for him that day. "We have been working on your idea," he said, "and here is the first attempt at it. We're calling it a plane." In front of him stood the new plane, still sitting on a small wheeled wagon. Ralph started to perform his checks as usual, noting the differences in this one, pleased to see his ideas made solid. The breeze blew into his face as he stood behind the plane. Perfect, it would aid in giving him lift as he moved. This machine was distinguished from the previous one by the wood and brass propeller at the rear. The 5 curved blades had been carved from wood and fitted into a brass center. The whole thing was polished to a glossy finish. Ralph gave a gentle tug on one of the blades, and it spun freely. It had obviously been mounted on fine bearings as it continued to rotate long after his hand left it. Several of the old engineers were stood around muttering. The general thought amongst them was, "It will never move." That and, "How can such a small propeller move enough air?" And there was much nodding in agreement. His artisan came to talk to him. "Take care, Ralph," he said in a kindly tone. "And remember that this is not our only plane. The base is strong enough for a landing on the road, or you may make it to the sea. The ship is alerted to your flight." Lowering his voice, he continued, "Bring it back if you can, but if it's a choice, then of course you must save yourself." Satisfied with his external inspection, Ralph settled himself in the cockpit and tested his controls. The burner was lit, and a strange machine mounted on the rear of the steam mobile was backed into position alongside the craft. A long rod was inserted into a hole on the side of the plane and engaged some gearing inside with a metallic click. At a signal from Ralph, the machine started, and the rod spun under the power of the coiled spring inside it. Clearly, this was attached to the shaft on which the propeller was mounted, as it now began to spin. Ralph increased the rate of the burner, and the craft vibrated. It wished to move as it rattled against the wedges holding the wagon. The force created by the shaft's rotation must have triggered a release mechanism as the rod shot backwards, clear of the craft. The propeller blades were a blur as power increased, and Ralph waved the wedges away. Once they were gone, the whole machine rolled with ever-increasing speed along the road, as the heated air spun the shaft and the propeller faster. As it moved, more air was sucked in, and at once it was clear that Ralph's idea was perfect. Quickly, Ralph felt the plane's controls lighten. The airflow over the wings was enough to lift the craft clear of the wagon. He pulled back on his control column, and the ground fell away beneath him. Free from the drag, the plane shot ahead as it climbed into the sky with a roar. On the ground, the engineers were no longer doubters. Indeed, they all now said, "Of course it would work. I never doubted it." And other comments as they slapped Ralph's artisan on the back and shook his hand. He was pleased and relieved. He would have bragging rights for his trust in Ralph's ideas. Ralph reduced the gas supply to the burner and faced up to the realization that his idea had worked. He knew that somehow his life would never be the same. However, he also wondered how he might bring the machine safely back to Earth. Landing had never been one of his strong points. If his craft survived at all, his landings were a sort of semi-controlled crash. But that was in the future. He looked at the rudimentary instruments in front of him. Installed at his insistence, and all based on the science of pressure differences, they showed his height and speed and the amount of gas left. To his surprise, he found that the burner had used a lot less gas than he had expected. Hoping this was not a mistake, he tapped the gauge with a gloved finger. The needle jerked, but did not fall. Ralph could see that there was plenty for several minutes flying before he would have to face the landing question. Banking slowly, he decided to fly over the main buildings, to show his craft to the people there. He leveled out of his turn. The whole camp was below him, tiny in the vastness of the countryside. He pointed the nose of the plane down and headed towards the buildings. The first that anyone knew of his approach was when the windows rattled at his passing. Running outside, they just saw the tail of the plane disappear behind the buildings. After a few seconds, it reappeared, climbing until it was vertical and then upside down, finally rolling till it was the right way up again. The engine howled as it dove and passed overhead again, leaving a wind in its passing. As Ralph climbed back into the sky, he saw that he was not alone. His flight had attracted the attention of a Drogon, which had come to investigate. Even though he was moving faster than he had ever flown before, its large wings beat effortlessly as it kept pace with him. The head turned, and a beady eye regarded him, the lashed lid blinking. He felt no fear of the beast, and increased the burner to maximum, increasing his speed, yet still the beast was there. He spotted a line of balloons far below him, that marked the valley where his flying adventures had all started. While he had been distracted, the landing strip had fallen well behind. He could just return, but had a better idea. He would ditch in the water. He just hoped that the plane could be salvaged. He started to reduce his altitude, to fly into the valley, the Drogon keeping station just off the end of his left wing. The watchers could hear the plane approach, but could not see it coming down the valley. Then one glanced up and saw the Drogon and the plane flying in company, descending towards them. There was no signal flag for that, but the Drogon approaching flag was displayed, and the gas guns were trained from the baskets of the balloons and the hillside. The telescopes of the balloonists saw that the Drogon was escorting the plane. No attempt was made to fire, for fear of hitting Ralph. As Ralph passed over the first balloon and turned to follow the line of the valley, the Drogon sensed that it was in a dangerous place and peeled off to seek other game. Ralph saluted as it flapped away. The watchers could see that more control existed in this version of the flying machine, as it twisted and turned down the valley. In each balloon that he passed, the officer trained his telescope on the plane, and by his side, a signaller waved flags in the direction of the next post. Watchers on the hills repeated the message. It raced ahead of the plane until it was received by a naval vessel, wallowing in the low swell just off the river mouth. Seconds later, the plane itself appeared, banking around the last turn in the valley before streaking towards the ship. Lower and lower it sank, until it was barely skimming the waves. There was silence as the engine died, empty of fuel. Slower and slower it went, down the side of the ship. And then, as it seemed that it must dive into the water, the nose lifted. Abruptly it stopped, and seemed to hang in the air for a second, and then it fell down, landing in the crest of a swell. It bobbed like any other boat as the warship closed in on it, cranes already swinging overside as a small boat rowed alongside it. A sailor clambered onto the wing and attached the crane's swinging hook to the lifting ring just behind the cockpit. Steam filled the crisp air as the plane and its pilot were lifted on board by the wheezing crane. Ralph had completed his flight, and the plane was intact. This time he had not even got his feet wet. Once the plane had been lowered to the deck of the warship, he breathed a sigh of relief, undid his straps, and climbed out. The captain greeted him as he entered the wheel space.
"Well done, sir. That was the best flying yet. More often than not, we only collect the pilots."
"Thank you, Captain," replied Ralph. "I'm pleased to have kept dry this time."
Will we be returning directly to land? My artisan needs to know of my success. The warship had already turned its bow towards the jetty at the river's mouth, and soon secured alongside. A flat wagon was waiting to collect the plane, together with the engineers. They had all climbed into the steam mobile and followed his progress. Now it pulled to a halt and they disembarked. A round of applause rang out, and they crowded round to slap his back.
"I told you," Ralph said to his artisan engineer. "It flies like a drogon."
"I know," replied the man.
"We saw you and the beast racing for the coast. I was faster, and I have other ideas as well, to make it even better."
"Well done, young Ralph," replied the man. "We will have to see about that. For now, bask in your glory." On their return to the camp, they were met by a crowd who cheered at his feat and his survival.